Introduction. If I stepped in front of a bus. I'm not entirely sure whether it's a sign of pragmatism or just an advanced stage of whistling in the dark, but as I get older, I seem to be having a lot more conversations that begin with this. If I died tomorrow. Actually, that's not quite right. Other people put it that way. I like to be a little more folksy. I always say, if I stepped in front of a bus tomorrow. Which almost turned into a prophecy on a warm afternoon some months back, when I very nearly did just that. I damn near stepped in front of a bus. It wasn't the bus that almost killed me, at least not at first. It was the panel truck that the bus blocked from my view. I stepped off the curb of 5th Avenue and 33rd Street, certain that I could cross against the light, certain that I'd gauged the speed of the M3 bus correctly, and, with just a slight jog, I would be on my way to the subway that much faster. Somewhere between being right in front of the driver and having cleared the bus entirely, I realized my mistake, and I stepped backward as the truck blew past me. I stepped backward into the path of the bus. There was a horn. I can't tell you whether it was the trucks or the buses, or whether it was just the noise adrenaline makes when it's being pumped to one's every extremity at once, because I remember only the sound. And I remember the sound only because it somehow wove itself into the intense and immediate sense of panic I felt. I don't recall looking at the bus driver or how my legs got me back to the west side of 5th Avenue. I know only that the bus kept going, missing me by a very little bit, and I got back to where I started. Here's an interesting medical theory. If the heart races to 5 trillion beats per minute, short-term memory ceases to function. Maybe it's a problem of blood flow. However I avoided becoming a part of New York City's asphalt, the important part of the story is not that I was lucky, and how, nor that I was incredibly stupid, guilty as charged, Your Honor, but rather that my goose was very nearly cooked. This was suddenly for me not some lofty conversation about how I would like to be remembered. This was, oh my God, I nearly widowed my wife and left my children fatherless. This was also the first time I could ever recall feeling the need to do a little inventory on that part of the soul where regrets are stored. And you know what? I couldn't find any. While there were plenty of things I felt bad about, and even more that still make me flush with embarrassment, there was nothing that had any urgency to it. Nothing that I hadn't done that would have caused me to lose sleep, no serious trespass against anyone that I hadn't asked forgiveness for. For a guy who just stepped in front of a bus, I felt pretty good, except for one nagging thought. Call it a pre-regret if you'd like. If I had stepped off the curb in front of that bus and died stupidly and tragically, or even if I had died heroically, pulling children and nuns and puppies from a sinking boat in the East River, my last thought would have been this. I haven't shared with my daughters all the things I meant to as they grow up, like telling them all of the experiences I've had that might actually be of some use to them as they make their way in life. I would have regretted not passing along to them the lessons that I've learned from the mistakes I've made, the things I've gotten right, and the good advice that I've been given. That night, after squeezing my wife and daughters just a little tighter than usual, I lay awake wondering if there was a way to avoid that regret. Maybe for the first time since becoming a dad, I thought about how I would talk to my girls about the really important stuff, and when. Should I wait until things come up in their lives and try to comment on them as they happen? Should I hold my tongue until I'm asked? Should I be reading 548-page books by guys with degrees in child psychology and taking notes? What if my daughters won't listen to me? What if they think I'm too pushy, annoying, dumb, out of touch? What if I give lousy advice? Needless to say, sleep did not come easily. Over the next few days, I thought a lot about the best advice I've gotten and where it came from. I realized pretty quickly that the stuff that's helped me most in life came from all kinds of different sources, but always in the same way. Supportively, conversationally. I don't think I've followed a single piece of guidance that was given to me by someone who was lecturing. Nothing that started with, let me tell you something, or you need to listen to this, has ever sunk in very deep. All the good stuff has come in conversation, usually with people who are simply passing along their own experiences. Suddenly, parenting didn't seem quite so daunting. Maybe I didn't need to have a series of lectures prepared. They'd likely fall on deaf ears anyway. But instead, I could focus on explaining to my girls how I had come upon my own beliefs. I needed to be able to tell them not only what I'd learned, but also how I'd learned it. Of course, that still left the problem of the bus. On the chance, hopefully slim, that the Grim Reaper should decide to visit me anytime soon, I figured it would be best if I wrote down the things that I most wanted my daughters, Anna and Maggie, to know. About the same time that I started seriously thinking about what I hoped would eventually be a bunch of letters to my girls, I found myself writing letters to my friends' daughters to mark big events in their lives, both good and bad. It was my grateful friends telling me later that those notes served as good conversation starters with their girls who gave me the idea for this audiobook.